we talk about leadership as if we knew what we were talking about.
It was a very good experience that helped me learn what terrible leadership looks like.
I have this problem, and then the little manager talks to the medium manager and it goes up as necessary.
Are you going to name names?
Welcome to Leadership Decanted, where we engage with the latest thinking on all things leadership, and we keep the conversation flowing over a nice bottle of wine. How are you this afternoon?
I'm really, really good and really, really excited.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And you know why, Paul.
I do know why, because we have amazing wine today.
Yes, that's one.
Oh, that's
reason.
One. There's more than one reason.
There's more than one.
Okay. What's the other thing?
Oh, man, we have some guests that are going to really change things up for us. So I'm excited by that. But you know the wine is near and dear to me. So let's get started with what it is and what you brought for us today.
Okay. Well, I have been saving this particular bottle for no particular reason except that it's a magnum. What does that mean? It means that it's twice the size of a normal bottle of wine.
Nice.
And I never had a reason to open it up because I don't have that many friends.
Does it actually matter in the wine world?
In
life, I guess.
In life, more is better.
Okay.
Is that good enough?
That's good enough. Okay. I'm just wondering, you know, it's got its own name, so I just didn't know if that meant
something.
Yeah,
Magnum. Okay. Yeah, there are lots of names for big bottles. Oh. I can't remember. Jeroboam is one of them, but I don't know how big that one is. I think that's a humongous one.
Okay.
Right, so this particular large bottle is a Langhorne Creek McLaren Vale Shiraz. I think it's especially made for, there's a crew on the internet in Australia called, I think, Angel Wines or Naked Wines, that's
Naked
what they're called.
Naked Wines, okay.
Naked Wines.
Like it.
Look them up on the internet.
I'm doing it now, Paul.
So. Thank you. Okay. All right. And they are a group of people who provide, I think, funding, your subscription goes to the winemaker and often they commission wines. And this is one of them.
Okay, very nice.
I remember now.
You're making this sound like we should be, we're contributing to something. So
yes,
awesome.
We are. We're going to open up a 2017 Shiraz Langhorne Creek McLaren Vale. And it's the Grounded Crew, CRU. Are we ready?
Oh, we're ready.
Okay. Let's have a look.
Oh,
okay.
Nice. Yeah.
Doesn't sound as sexy as cork, but that'll do.
Oh, well.
Okay.
That's so old school.
Now, the reason why I have such a large bottle is because we have guests.
Yes.
And so we have, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 guests with us.
I know.
We've never had these many guests.
We've never had more
than
one.
Very special. So we're going to pour out this lovely wine and then see what happens.
Yes. Let's go.
All right. Slongey, everyone.
Now all this whole big bottle thing makes sense because we've got a lot of people drinking.
Oh, we do.
I actually thought it was just for us, but now I know. Now I know.
We do have a lot of people drinking. It's not bad, is it?
No, it's actually really nice.
It's nice and fruity and very simple. What they say, fruit-driven Shiraz.
Ah.
From the McLaren Vale
I've never
region.
Heard that
very
phrase,
nice.
But now I know. Now
okay, I know. So now for the piece de resistance, our guests today, very special. Full disclosure, before I introduce them, they are connected in one way or another to my family.
Ooh.
Through friendships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They are friends of my son. And they, I believe, yes, they all went to school together.
Wow.
But this was a long time ago. Or it feels like a long, does it feel like a long time ago?
Weirdly, it does and doesn't.
yeah, that limbo space. All right, so I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves and then I'll explain why they're here. How does that sound?
I can't wait. I'm good with that. Let's go.
Go for it. Whoever would like to start can start.
I am Paige and I am working full time.
Ah, fantastic. Thanks, Paige.
I'm Cal. My pronouns are they, them. I'm a full-time student at the moment.
Oh, thanks, Cal.
Fair enough.
I'm Hugh. I am a full-time student at UTS.
I'm Marisa. I'm a full-time student at the University of Sydney.
Fantastic. Cool. Thank Very you. Cool. Hey, do you have any idea why we've invited these lovely people here today?
I kind of do, because we talk about leadership and they're here to help us talk about leadership. Is that right? Sure, I'll take that.
So did I
get that one right?
Yeah, so we've been doing this thing, right? We've been doing this podcast thing for probably over a year.
Oh, man, it's been forever. Yeah, it hasn't been forever.
It's one of those space-time continuum conundrums as well. But here we are, you know, two middle-aged men. Well, actually, one of us is middle-aged. The other one is quite youthful. I'll let listeners work out which is which. And so we bring a certain amount of biases and assumptions, models to how, you know, we talk about leadership as if we knew what we were talking about. I don't think it's always the case.
I know it's not always the case.
What I thought would be, what you and I thought would be great is to hear other voices. Now, we do that every now and again through some guests that we bring along, but they're often also in that same age bracket.
Yes, our middle-aged youth, that bracket. Yeah.
Are you talking for yourself there? Or is
well, however you want to frame it. But the reality is we always are listening to a certain demographic.
Yeah, and usually voices similar to ours.
Yeah, yeah. So there's an opportunity, right, to hear voices that are not like ours. Mm. Maybe still some like ours, but definitely a different demographic, which is exciting because the assumption is that there's going to be some things that are similar and some things that they're going to think totally different than we do.
That's the exciting part. Yeah. So I don't want to make any assumptions. We do talk about leadership, but for all I know, it's not a word they usually use. You and I use it all the time. We breathe it. We talk it. We work with it all the time.
Yeah.
Not everybody is in the same camp.
Not everybody cares.
That does lead me to the first question. Is leadership, is the concept, the practice, even the word, anything you yourself ever think about?
Or care about?
Hmm.
Well, I think it's very applicable to everyone. I don't think you get away with living through life without experiencing some form of leadership.
Mm, tell me more. as he was going
to
drink.
He's about to drink. Let him drink.
That's a very open-ended question, but sure. I mean, look, your parents are really like the first form of leadership you really experience. So, I mean, it's really hard to get away without that. Even if, God forbid, you don't have parents, you still have leaders. So I guess it's really applicable to everyone. I can't see a situation where you wouldn't experience leadership and then, I guess, develop your own opinions on what leadership should and shouldn't be.
Is it something you spend a bit of time thinking about, or is it just something that because you're born into a particular structure, it's kind of there, but you don't really think about it?
I mean, I can't speak for everyone, obviously, but from my personal experience, I don't, you know, consciously analyze leadership, but I have a strong understanding of what I expect out of someone who is supposed to be leading me.
Supposed to be leading you. That's interesting.
Yes, supposed to. Yes, I caught that too. I like it.
So, Rosa, what are you thinking? Do you spend any time thinking about leadership?
Yeah, I do, quite a bit.
Quite a bit?
I'm interested in politics, probably too much for my own good.
Okay, so yours is much more politically driven.
Yeah, once again, it's also lived experience. As Cal said, you can't get away from it. And even if you don't want to be a leader, sometimes you are. And if you don't want to be subjected to the exercise of social power, which is a form of leadership, you will be, in a sense, I think. So you're
suggesting that leadership is inevitable. The experience of leadership is inevitable.
I think if there's more than one person or one agent of power in any sense, it's likely going to happen.
Mm. Okay.
Someone's going to lead and someone's going to follow no matter what, right?
Or a shared responsibility.
Yeah, okay. Right. Because what you're suggesting, otherwise it's just a power dynamic, an unequal power dynamic.
Yeah, and that's probably a bit too broad. No.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's nice. Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone else up for the question? Do you spend any time at all talking about or thinking about leadership?
I definitely do, in a similar way to Rosa, in the sense I'm very interested in politics because I think it's something that's very important to understand. And I think You can't analyze politics without looking at structures of power. I don't think it's possible.
Mm.
And I think leadership falls within that sphere of how we have power dynamics between individuals.
Okay, so for you also, the leadership rests within that framework of power, power dynamic, power relationships and things like that?
Yeah, because to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, leadership is...
I wouldn't correct you. I wouldn't dare. That's a whole point of having you here.
is we put someone in charge or a group in charge to make decisions for our best interest. Mm. And that is necessarily some form of power dynamic. And I think analyzing that is very interesting. And there's a lot to learn. And there's a lot to realize about how we structure society to reap the benefits of unified leadership and working together while also not affecting individual liberties and freedom.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's big.
I think when I think about leadership, obviously it's in all areas of life, like politics and the family dynamic as well. Yeah. But I think on a day-to-day basis, I'm thinking about it in my business and I aspire to be a leader myself. Right. So I'm looking at the leaders around me and what I can gather from them.
So it's kind of in your face then?
In my face all the time.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And so some of you are seeing it as an everyday thing, but some of you see it more in a political realm and some of you see it as almost inevitable, which is interesting because, you know, and again, assumptions I was not supposed to make, I made, and they're all incorrect.
Oh, really? What were your assumptions?
My assumption was that I probably didn't think a thing about politics, probably didn't care who did what on election, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I was into a party scene and dancing and in music. And if it wasn't somebody, a celebrity on TV, they didn't really have any authority or anything to me. That's what my world was when I was young. But, you know, I grew up in a different place than everyone here, right? So it was different for me. So when I hear the fact that you guys think about these things, I'm truly impressed. Or I feel like I missed out on something when I was in here.
Yeah, yeah. I certainly feel it was a certain arrested development in my youth. Absolutely.
It's like, oh, wow.
So in terms of the experience of leadership, so if you spend time thinking about leadership, Carl, you mentioned that we experienced leadership pretty early on, mm-hmm. for those of us who have either parents or guardians, I guess.
Yeah.
In your life now, are you aware of experiencing leadership, whether it's you practicing leadership or whether it's you being led?
There's really a lot of cases, and it comes down to sort of how broadly you want to define leadership and what the sort of time frame that leadership has to affect you in.
Okay. How would you define it?
Well, I think we can apply quite a broad... I mean, you've got like Paige's situation where she's working every day with people who are very traditionally leaders, managers and business operators and things like
that. Like in a hierarchy.
Yeah, very, very hierarchical, very strict. But if you think about even as adults, to some degree, you know, our parents will still lead us. I look to my mom for advice a lot of the time.
Yeah.
My teachers have a sort of leadership. You know, even just really any sort of power structure where someone is expected to offer you a sort of benevolence, it ends up being a sort of leadership. And those can be very transient.
Right.
They don't necessarily have to last for a long time, even an interaction over 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then, as other people said, politics, mm-hmm. which is very much not transient. And whether you necessarily subscribe to it or not, whether you're like paying attention to it, they are still leading you.
They're still doing it.
Yeah.
You use a really interesting word, which I'm keen to unpack a little bit. You talked about benevolence. Is your other people's understanding or experience of leadership, does it require benevolence, or have you experienced benevolence in that process? What do you think?
I think good leadership would have benevolence, but I think you can still have leadership and not have it be benevolent. You can have bad leadership and it's still leadership, whether we like it or not. I think, though, sometimes the structure that surrounds a leader or that has empowered that leader can be a huge influence on how they exercise that leadership and to what extent they can do it.
Can you think of an example?
I can think of one that's very specific to history.
Okay. Specifics are good.
There's the example of Yugoslavia, which was a dictatorship, and it wasn't necessarily a stereotypical dictatorship. It wasn't a Kim Jong-un sort of thing, and it was held together, and a lot of people sort of attribute the fact that it was held together to its leader, and people said, oh, look, maybe authoritarian can sort of work. This structure of leadership can work. But as soon as he died, within a decade, the country fell apart. There was awful violations of human rights. I think that proves that you still have to be careful about the structure that you've put that leader in, because people aren't around forever and you're basically rolling the dice on who you get. And I do wonder sometimes as well, does that position of leadership change the person over time as well? You know, if someone's given too much power, you know, we all say we'd be a benevolent leader.
Sure.
But yeah, is that true? We can't say that.
You're suggesting perhaps that adage of, you know, absolute power corrupting absolutely.
Yeah.
You were going to say something?
Just to expand on what Rosa was saying, I definitely the way leadership is organized affects the people in those positions of power and affect the type of people they attract. I think if you have people who are very absolutist and think they would be great and should rule over everyone, they're not going to be the type of people you want in power. And yet those are the type of people you attract when you have highly concentrated positions of power or leadership. Generally, you don't get the people who are like, well, I think everyone deserves a say, and at least from what I understand in history.
Okay, so your position is you think that certain leadership structures attract and then maybe self-perpetuate.
Yeah, I think it filters out a lot of people who would genuinely use that position of power for good, and you're left with very tough and brutal people a lot of the time. And that's what we see with things like dictatorships, I think, a lot of the time.
You, Paige, do you have a thought around those things?
I think the question is what makes a good leader?
Yeah.
You can be a leader,
yes,
be absolutely horrible at it, and you can also have good leadership qualities but still not be a leader.
Okay. Now you're separating the qualities of a potential leader from either their behaviour or their practice.
Yeah, I think in a business or in politics, you can have the title that says you are a leader, big sticker on your chest that says you're a leader, but you could be absolutely horrible at it.
Positional authority doesn't necessarily guarantee good leadership.
Yeah.
So for you, what would make a good leader in your context? What are you looking for, or how do you recognize good leadership?
I think a good leader is someone who is good at managing people, someone who's accountable, they've got integrity. I think that they need to have the skills for the context. So, you know, whether it be politics, you need to be good at being a politician.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you're a team leader, you need to manage a team.
Right. Right? So you have to meet certain baseline criteria for a particular role or discipline or function.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So with that, this is personal, and you can tell me go away if you want to, KG. Do you consider yourself a leader?
I like to think that I have good leadership qualities, yeah. I wouldn't say I have that little sticker on my chest that says I'm a leader, but I would like that sort of position, and I think that any opportunity given, I would demonstrate that those qualities.
Okay. So I guess with all of us around the table, I'll bounce that between you and ask the same questions, because what I'm hearing a lot of is we're talking about a role, title, or a position. But on some level, we talked about also that, you know, we kind of have leadership that exists around us. So personally, do you see yourself as in that position? Do you lead amongst your peers, your friends, your coworkers? Do you find yourself doing that? Or where do you see yourself in the whole construct?
I think personally, I try to lead in the areas I feel capable while not necessarily taking on a position of leadership. So let's say we're working on a project and I am good at a specific part of the project, I will innately be a leader to some extent while not declaring myself a leader and trying to step back when someone comes in who knows a bit more about something else. And in that way, it is possible to share the responsibility of leadership amongst team members while having no specific leader.
Oh, right. So you're talking about everyone contributing So leadership as a capability in a group as opposed to leadership stemming from the one person or personality. A lot of ideas going on here, KG. Like a lot of ideas. I tell you what I'm kind of struck by at the moment, apart from how the IQ in this room just shot up with these four wonderful people here, the vision that Paige has made around the quality, that perhaps the inherent qualities that might exist for potential leaders, but the need to practice and behave in a particular, almost like a muscle, I guess. You're building muscle in leadership. The idea around distributed leadership is the notion that we're already in leadership constructs and models in our daily lives, whether or not we're aware of it, we're being led, or we're being led, or we're leading with that awareness. There's a lot of things going on.
There is.
What are you catching?
I'm catching all of that. I just want to say ditto.
Yes. what he said. Yep, gotcha.
No, I just think that it is pretty interesting because, again, from my limited socialization with younger people, I did not expect that the notion really existed until you got like much, much further down the track and you had to start thinking about family structures and then you start thinking about a career path and then you start thinking about, do I want to lead and all that kind of stuff. And just the sheer fact that we're having conversations about all of those things at such a time in your life is pretty exciting because what it does is it bodes well for the future because we're thinking about those things in a different way than we probably have.
Yeah, similar to you, I was never able to articulate these sorts of ideas at this age, but
no.
Cal?
I just wanted to say that I think it's, for better or worse, a real result of the times. I think that, how you two spent your...
Misspent youth.
Well, you say misguided and spent, but really, I think we're just a result of the times. You know, we're in there's a lot of turmoil at the moment in every aspect, and it ends up being very, very hard to look away from things. Yeah. And, the better part of that is that we have a lot of focus on things like mental health and understanding abuse. A lot of people who grew up with parents who were maybe less than stellar or a parent may sort of have a better understanding of how that affects them and their expectations of leaders. And as a bit of a throwback, I also wanted to add that I really agree with Hugh's assessment of group leadership.
Yes.
It might be a little bit controversial for the topic, but I'm not a huge fan of the traditional hierarchical leadership.
Yeah.
I don't think that it... I think that usually leaders lead too broad of an area to have absolute control over it. Mm-hmm. You see this a lot in companies where a manager just has absolutely no idea how to work with, they're managing an art team and for me, because I want to do game development as a career, so it's very relevant, but they're managing an art team and a programming team and audio and just like all these different disciplines with so many different, like very, very specific knowledge bases. And there's no way you can expect one person to understand that.
Yeah.
So one person having absolute control, I don't think it's the most productive.
Yeah. So what we would normally call that in our parlance is that command and control approach to leadership that in your experience, even in your context, doesn't work. Command and control doesn't work. It could be argued that command and control never works, but then you've got Rose's example of Tito in Yugoslavia. Maybe that worked.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a historian, but it sounded like it worked until it didn't.
I would add a disclaimer there because he wasn't a good person with human rights necessarily. Right. It was more that he was able to keep together a country that was very different in different places. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't coming off as supporting him as a...
Do you want me to... do you want to kind of write down a bit of a disclaimer that we can
No, it's fine. Yeah, I suppose I hadn't articulated that as well as I should have earlier.
No, that was good. Thank you. So, are you going to say something, Rosie?
I was just going to associate myself with what Cal had said before.
Okay. All right. I want to just turn back to what Paige talked about in terms of your own definition of what good leadership might be. I'm interested in whether you provide a precise, some form of articulation of what good leadership looks like to you. Yeah, you.
I think it depends how you define leadership. I think if we're talking about a organization, an individual, being above others. I think what's most important is they have to justify their existence. And if they can't, I think we've really got to question why they're there. So in a team, it might be really imperative to have a leader. Say you're in a war situation, you might need one person to be calling the shots.
Right, yes.
You can't question that. You can question that, but you can't say that's wrong. But say we're in a small development team, Cal and I and some other people, and someone says, I am now a leader. It's like, well, why? Why do you have the authority over us? And if you can provide a very good reason, then maybe you should stay there. But if not, we should have autonomy over the way we do things and help each other out.
Right.
Yeah.
To me, that's crucial in leadership.
Yeah. And I think what you're pointing at for me, you correct me if I'm wrong, is you're highlighting that different contexts might require different types of leadership.
Yeah.
Because in the theatre of war, if every soldier starts questioning command, you're going to get chaos. But in other contexts where perhaps the stakes are different, you might not need that type of leadership.
To summarise it in one line, I would say leadership has to be beholden to the people it is leading over.
Mm.
And if it's not, it will eventually end up being co-opted for nefarious needs, I think.
It should be serving the people
who
are being kind of led, right? If not, then it's...
And the way you get it to serve those people is have it be directly responsible for those people and those people to actually be in charge of that position of leadership.
Would it be any different to say serving a purpose as opposed to people, or is it more the people? Is it more a purpose, or are they not mutually exclusive?
Would you be able to give like an example of?
Yeah, sure. So let's say I'm working in a hospital and the purpose of this hospital is to cure people. And I'm a head nurse in the emergency ward. In your example or your definition, which I think is a really good one, am I serving the people around me? Am I serving my staff in my leadership, or am I serving the purpose of why, you know, if I'm going to justify my existence, am I justifying it because I'm serving the people that I'm working with, or is it because I am fulfilling the purpose for which I am there, or am I just splitting hairs?
I would say in that position of leadership, you are beholden to the other nurses.
Mm.
And I would say the organization of nursing is beholden to the people who rely upon it to receive decent healthcare. And people should then start questioning the institution of, say, nursing if there's a huge issue, hypothetically.
Right. So there's a cascading set of responsibilities, I guess, that you're pointing to.
I'd like to just add on my own thoughts to that.
Yeah.
I think that when we talk about whether a manager is supposed to be serving the greater organization or the patients in your example versus their own staff, you sort of have to, in these hypothetical situations, assume that the staff intend to fulfill their purpose. Obviously, leadership where you're beholden to the people doesn't work when the people don't want to, you know, actually fulfill the purpose they're there for, right? If you get a job as a nurse, in a sense, I wouldn't say strictly speaking, but in a sense, you are sort of leading your patients. You know, you're taking care of them. You have power over them. You're trying to help them.
Yeah.
And so really, a manager is there to serve the staff, but the staff are there to serve the people. And if the staff stops serving the people, then you've got a failure in leadership, not in management, but lower down. And that's sort of where disciplinary action has to come in, because obviously humans aren't perfectly good and sometimes this fails.
But. Yeah, no.
I think I kind of have a different perspective on, or maybe agree with the fact that hierarchical leadership structure can work sometimes and other times it doesn't. Like in the example of having different teams working on a project, I think that it's good for each team to have maybe like a team manager or whatever who can lead that team. But then I think it's good to have an overall project manager, because otherwise each team will do their own thing and assume, oh yeah, we've got our own time frame, or yeah, that other team is doing that thing. You need someone over there to say, all of you, this is your time frame, you are doing this, you are doing this, you are doing this, and defining their scope and defining their timelines. And I think that works best even in like say a nurse or an office or whatever, different teams have their own manager, and say the department or the branch has their own manager. So we can't expect that one branch manager to lead 100 different people, 100 different nurses, but maybe each department has their own manager, and it's that manager's job to communicate with the bigger leader.
Yeah, I mean, I want to specifically talk about your reference to project, yep, because that's where my expertise lies. It's the best way I can understand leadership. But I guess there's sort of a distinction to be made, and I'm not saying either of these definitions is correct, but the distinction between whether a project manager is simply a part of a greater whole, as in they are a leader alongside the team leaders. The project manager is performing their role of organizing the timing, but they also have to make pretty huge concessions based on what the team leaders tell them, because a project manager has no understanding of programming or how long features take to make, etc. So I guess the distinction is like whether that would be just considered good hierarchical leadership, or whether it's more of a less hierarchical, a more apt word might be a more authoritarian form of leadership versus a more communal.
Okay, so you're making a distinction between authoritarian type of, not necessarily malevolent, but just authoritarian.
Yes.
Versus kind of that more democratic or consultative approach.
Right. I think that could be your definition of a good leader is more democratic. And maybe that leader would say, hey, arts team, how long would you need to do this thing? Okay, excellent, I'll keep that in mind. Hey, and speak to each team leader and get their overall scope after speaking to everyone.
I think on that point, that you've just brought up is, well, that example even you've brought up highlights a good point, which is I think a leader does need to consult a lot with the people that they're leading, be able to process the information coming in from those people, I think, and listen to them. And they need to be somebody who can accept a no if they say, for example, they tell the art team they need a particular thing done within 3 weeks and the art team says, no, we're going to need 5 weeks for that. A good leader is somebody who is able to take that into account and make changes for that, I think, and swallow their pride on that.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, because that's the what I'm hearing is that it's kind of that two-way exchange of information. It's not just your pushing down information. It's having it come back and being able to understand what is coming back from the people around you to be able to make the right decisions about how you lead. And if we look at what we're talking about as a whole, we're saying that on a day-to-day basis, structure is all good. It can work, and if it's done well. But there are some times when you just need to exchange leadership between people because a person may not know everything. So other people need to be able to have the ability, the flexibility to contribute to that leadership position and exchange back and forth instead of being a single person who's always the one who makes that call.
Assuming that they know they have all the answers.
Yeah, that's right. And we're saying that that's definitely not the case in most structures. Even when the person has a positional authority, they still need to be able to follow people when the time comes, which is interesting. Yeah.
Really good. Well, that's certainly what I'm already enjoying about this conversation is that there is a lot of fluidity in definition and experience. No, and no one's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So we're not saying structure sucks, throw away structure. Or we only ever have to consult and no one has to make any decisions. It doesn't sound like that's what we're talking about. Would that be right?
Absolutely.
So I guess the question, I'm interested in knowing your experiences. If you think back about, in retrospect, an experience of leadership, whether it's shared, distributed leadership or whether it's top down, whatever it might be. If you think of your own experiences, can you think of one or two particular experiences that for you were transformative? Whether it's transforming your life or your thinking or your experience of whatever you were doing?
I think this would be a really good thing to open up because out of the four of us here, three of us have experienced the same leadership, which was transformative in a negative way.
I guess I wasn't very clear about which way we had to go. So go ahead.
It provided a very interesting case study on what you really don't like about leadership. I'm pretty sure everyone relates a lot to, you know, anyone who's listening who's in like a corporate structure or anything.
Right. So this is three out of four of you have experienced this.
Three out of four. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, this relates very much to corporate hierarchies and how people are like, oh yeah, my manager is awful. They tell me what to do. They never listen, you know.
Are you going to name names?
I'm talking to you.
There were four of us at once. We worked at a bar, and there was a particular manager, and he was pretty terrible. I just wanted to open the floor to that because I have my own thoughts on it, but I thought I'd...
So what made him pretty terrible for you?
And what made it transformative?
And what made it... Yeah, I guess actually that's a better question. But let's start with what made him terrible. What made this person terrible?
For one, it's just extremely unkind in the most personal sense, in the way he interacted with each and every person. Mm-hmm. He was quite rude. He was very inflammatory intentionally. I remember him making one of my coworkers cry because she needed to catch a flight back to the country she actually lived in, because she was only temporarily in there. You know, he'd say things that were just a little bit maybe racist at times, but a lot of it was also how authoritarian he was, and also how he just did nothing while telling everybody else what to do. Which made it feel a lot like he was getting paid more money to do less.
We're in a way, I guess indirectly, we were kind of paying him to tell us what to do.
Some people would call him an awesome leader as a result. That clearly wasn't your experience.
I think it's because he, Machiavelli in The Prince said, a leader who wants to cement their position of power will lead either by getting people to respect them through love or to respect them through fear. And this individual managed to keep his position through fear, but you didn't really respect him.
Right, okay.
There's something I would like to add to it is that one thing I find really interesting about that workspace, which says a lot to me, is that there were these individuals who had been working there a very long time, and they were the informal managers. If you had an issue, they were the people you went to. They would help you out, they would tell you what to do, and they would do all this without the need to be your leader, without any bit of paper or anything to wave at you and say, I'm in charge. But they would do it because they wanted to help people and they wanted to provide a good experience for the other workers there.
I'd say as well, to anyone who says, well, you know, business needs to run and it needs to run smoothly, I'd say what you just stated there, that's how I think you have a business run smoothly, is you have people who are intimately aware of how each process works. Calling those shots, or at least, you know, making those decisions on the fly, usually works better. And this individual who we're discussing as abusing his position of power was, if anything, making the business run less well. They were making less money because he was there.
What you're highlighting here is there was informal leadership that seemed to open up avenues for getting things done where the formal leadership wasn't doing its job.
And the funny thing about that is what happens usually is that informal leadership is actually what keeps that person who's a bad leader in their role, because it's that informal leadership that actually helps make the business successful.
Right, because no one feels the pain. There are people kind of on the floor,
they're making it
better, fixing it before it gets up the higher ups.
Wow.
From a transformative point of view, though, as KG asked earlier, how was this experience transformative, at least for you, Cal?
It was a very good experience that helped me learn what terrible leadership looks like, and the ramifications of that. And I very much agree with the informal leadership stops the effects of the poor leadership from trickling up, so they retain their job or whatever. And a lot of that in that case was, you know, if you'd go and ask this manager a question, he'd spend a minute condescending you about how you should already know it rather than spending the 10 seconds to actually answer the question.
Right.
You know, and especially me. So I want to disclose that I have ADHD, which obviously is a disability. And sometimes that includes maybe it takes a few times for me to remember things like where something is. Where are the cleaning products? Okay, they're over on that shelf in whatever. It might take a few times. But he wasn't understanding of any of that. And it honestly took longer for him to be rude than it did for him to answer the question.
Just answer the question.
And so you'd never go to the manager. Mm. You'd go to your coworkers and be like, hey, do you know where this is? Mm. So that was very formative in understanding what a bad leader looks like.
Yeah.
It did help us see what good leadership was as well, in that there were some other managers there as well who were good managers in that they pretty much just acted like the rest of our coworkers who didn't have the management badge.
Yeah.
You know, like, sure, they had the badge or whatever and they had the key to the office, but if they saw that there was a pile up of plates, for example, they'd go and walk in and actually contribute to that themselves and it's, all right, this needs to be done.
Yeah, that's what you want, right? Somebody with you versus telling you what to do.
But it does that raise the question for me, if those types of informal leadership practices exist, and they do, many of us may have experienced them.
And why is that informal? Why do we call
informal insofar as they are not recognized by the structure as leaders?
Oh, no title.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right. That's what I mean by informality. Okay. What Carl Rosa and Hugh's experience suggest to me is that these sorts of systems are self-healing self-healing or self-directed in some way, where if there is informal leadership going on, then rather than the organism feeling the pain of its lack, it's kind of self-healed and finds a way through.
Yeah.
Now, is that a good thing?
Yeah. Oh, I just want to make the clarification that it is, and this may sound a little bit pedantic, but self-mitigating.
Self-mitigating.
Not self-healing.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And what difference is that for you? What do you mean?
Oh, just that it never really reaches the level of efficiency and productivity it could have had with a proper, strong leadership structure, whether that you know, is a communal or hierarchical.
So it's always going to be inefficient.
It's always going to be less efficient. So
it's still got the problem.
Mm-hmm.
They're
working around it temporarily.
Bit of a band-aid.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. But eventually you will be laid out.
Possibly, yeah.
Well, it's going to be sore for a very long time.
Yeah. And these people hang around a long time. And organizations with very poor leadership, even at the highest rungs of the corporate world, they do tend to hang around a really long time, even with poor leadership.
Yep, they get promotions too.
And things like, yeah.
And awards, yeah. And you're like,
So what about good leadership? I use that term reservedly, but what about leadership that may have had a positive impact for you? Is there anything, anybody or anything that you can think of?
I might just be very positive, but I think I've had a good experience with leaders in my company. I think even board members who, you know, are overseeing the whole country, because they're personable and because they are empathetic, you know, just talking to them, I really love this board member. That guy is really cool and I love talking to him. And obviously I understand that they don't have the time to speak and understand every individual little person's job. But if they have the good skills to communicate with their like the people just underneath them, and then they talk to people underneath them. And I think a hierarchy should be a two-way street. So I think that whilst, yes, orders should be coming up from below, the little guys can say, hey, little manager, I have this problem. And then the little manager talks to the medium manager and it goes up as necessary.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that I've experienced that. I think even talking about informal leadership, I say I would have fallen into that role recently.
Yeah.
A team at my company, pretty much all the employees left, the manager left, and then they were like, oh no, we need to fill in this hole. So we hired 6 new people and said, Paige, can you help out? I was, oh, okay, I don't know anything about that department. So, you know, learning as much as I can, learning pretty much alongside these 6 new people, but then having those people go, Paige, can you answer this question? I don't know what I'm doing. And then having to go, yeah, I can answer the question, or I don't know, I've been here in this department as long as you, and then going and taking the initiative to get those answers for those people. I think even like last week as an example, there was something that I was like, hey, my managers, something needs to be done. Like, can we get this done? And they're like, oh, I don't have time, or I don't know, it was too hard. I'm like, this needs to get done. And it was like a couple of days of me asking and asking to the point where I went, if you want something done, do it yourself. And I went and called like the IT people and was like, what do I need to do this thing? And pretty much got it out. Otherwise, any later, and it would have just had so many angry customers come back because we didn't send them out a notification of what we were going to do over Easter.
Wow. There you go. Cal, you've got
self-mitigation.
Yeah. Self-mitigation.
That's, I think, the core of the problem, is that this big issue would have happened, but you solved it.
Yeah.
You are not formally responsible for solving that issue,
but
you did it anyway. Yeah. It might have happened a little bit slower than it should have, but the business didn't suffer as much because of you.
Yeah.
But do you think if we were to characterize the business as a thinking, pulsing thing, do you think the business would have learnt anything from that without having felt the pain?
Oh, no, they would have absolutely blamed. Like, the blame always trickles down, because if you have someone under you, you can blame. I mean, I don't think I'd do it. I hope I wouldn't do it, but I think it happens a lot where people are like, well, I don't want to be blamed for this, so They don't want the ire of their manager. So instead, they're like, no, it's this person's fault. They're new on the job. They're easy to blame. They can't defend themselves. They're just like some like pawn of the company, you know?
Ouch.
I think blame for stochastic issues is an interesting one. So by that, I mean an issue which is maybe born out of no individual's fault, but just a sort of slow rot that has caused something. For example, once again, bringing up a topic from history with the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. core problem of it was due to a design flaw in the reactor. Now, there wasn't any one particular person who said, oh, we're going to make the reactor have this design flaw. It was just corners cut here and there in this huge bureaucratic system that led to that existing. But at the end of the day, the people who got punished was just the managers on duty that day at the power plant. And, yeah, they did kind of break some rules here and there. But there was also this design flaw in the reactor that they weren't responsible for. How do you assign blame in this huge systemic issue that occurred? You know, sometimes there's a sort of does not compute problem here.
Yeah. It was up and down when it should just be right here, because whoever designed it, that was a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
So it's not the people who are working today that you should be blaming.
Maybe they just want to a knot on it and say, okay, that's done.
Sure. Well, yes, I think we do tend to lean into oversimplification of very complex problems because it's easier to deal with specific solutions.
It's like if a child starves on the street, who is to blame for that? You know, if there was plenty of food available and a child starved on the street, you know, you can't point at any one particular person and say, you caused this.
Mm.
It's a collective failure when that happens.
So can you say a bit more around what this collective responsibility is? Is that leadership too?
I think it's a form of leadership. It is kind of pushing it. You mentioned earlier there was this elastic sort of definition of leadership or context-based, and I think it is pushing it, but there's definitely some sort of social, you know, like village raising a child, in a sense, leadership there. If someone else wanted to elaborate on that.
But in a village raising a child scenario, does the buck stop anywhere?
I think so.
You think so? Where do you think it stops, KG?
With everyone.
With everyone.
I think that's the point, right?
The buck stops with everyone.
Well, because as soon as someone, anyone in that group doesn't do their bit, you know, it's the lowest common denominator, right? That's how things fall through. So if anyone doesn't do what they need to do, if they don't recognize there's a problem, then the child doesn't get raised properly. So I think that's where we started from, right? Was that we realized that people may have a title, but we all kind of give our leadership ability when it is required.
Yeah.
You know, we step forward whenever that moment, that need arises. Like Paige said, you know, oh, here it is. Someone's needing me. I'll go ahead and step forward and do it. Nobody's asking me to, but I know that it's the right thing to do. So I've done it. So I think the same thing applies in the village.
Right. I'm aware of the time. What I'd like to do, though, if it's okay with everybody, is...
It's not okay, Paul, you're going to say.
Regardless, I'm going to go ahead anyway.
I knew that was rhetorical.
Yeah, you knew it was on the card. Listeners know that we record this in Australia, and this is going to date us, I know, but a federal election has been called.
Oh, okay.
For the 21st of May. What are you hoping to see from leadership, or for those that put themselves up for political roles to govern the country? What are you hoping to see?
Independent accountability.
What do you mean?
So somebody who is willing to, funnily enough, what we were just talking about, willing to take blame for their missteps,
right,
will be willing to, I guess, just be a bit more transparent,
right,
when things go wrong.
Transparency.
Yeah.
I think that two-way communication.
Two-way communication.
Yeah. So, like, that's great. I'm telling you this is what's happening, but I'm also hearing the people.
Wow. Deep listening.
Deep listening, that's it. just listening, full stop. It doesn't even have to be deep at this point. Just something.
Very important to both of those. It's a very strong agree to both of those aspects, but also, you know, taking action. You can take blame all you want. Imagine a politician who sits there and is like, yep, climate change, I contributed to that because I did nothing. And it's like, great, you've taken blame, but
do something.
You didn't do anything. You're a politician, like, you're not there to look pretty.
For me, the thing I'm most interested in seeing is people start to pressure institutions and governments into enacting the changes they want to see. Like, if we look around the globe in terms of the amount of action that has been performed on climate change relative to the general population's response, there's a massive disconnect.
Yeah.
And in order to close that gap between the disconnect of what people think and what governments do, there needs to be social pressure. That's practically the only way it can be done, in my opinion.
Fantastic.
It's good. It's really good.
All right, KG, have you any final observations?
No. I'm two glasses in.
Yeah, two, you good. Are. It's not bad, is it?
No, it's really good. And this has been fantastic. That's my observation, is we should do more of this.
Yeah, I just want to thank you, everybody, for this. It's been fantastic. I've loved it. And I appreciate your kindness
and
generosity for your time. I hope we can do this again. I really do. Open to that possibility if you guys are up for it. So thank you again, and thank you to all our listeners.
Yes.
Slange.
Slange.
That's it for our show today. If you like what we do, if we like our conversations, if you want to hear more about what we do, please rate us, review us, subscribe, tell your friends, your family, your enemies, tell everybody you know. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback. If there's any particular leadership topic that you'd like to hear about or want us to explore, please let us know. We'd really appreciate that. And come back next time.